Thank you for joining us at the Roundtable.
Brought to you by Community Education Arts, a nonprofit organization based in Noblesville, Indiana.
I'm Alice Kavanagh Scober, President of CE Arts.
And I'm Sarah E. Morin, Secretary of CE Arts. Let's sit down
at the Roundtable. Welcome back as we continue our discussion of gender norms and roles in our four NICE selections this year, Jane Eyre, Gone with the Wind, Little Women, and Dracula.
So I spent the first half of the book just fascinated by the character of Mina, and I thought, wow, she's super cool, she's smart, she's calm, she's collected. She has both a nurturing quality to her, but she also has these skills where she can transcribe the Dr. Seward's notes, and she can put together disparate pieces of this puzzle that they're all trying to solve together to figure out who Dracula is and how to defeat him and where he is. And she's an essential part of that team of people that's out to get Dracula.
Yeah.
And she is highly praised by Van Helsing for both the womanly qualities and the intelligence.
Yeah, like they're mutually exclusive.
I know.
Thank you, Dr. Van Helsing.
But yeah, I mean, he has some quote that I think that you pointed out about how, you know, maybe God designed you for this moment of defeating this devilish character.
Yeah. I love that his analysis tells us that Mina is a character who is outside a gender norm acceptable, you know, role in society. That it's clear that at least men, if not women, did not believe that women could be both, you know, angelic and beautiful and womanly and intelligent and capable and action-oriented as Mina is. So that's very interesting to me.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, she is brave as well, because she's not going on the raids to, like, you know, stab anyone. But just the fact that she's even involved in this and she wants to be a part of it, she's not shying away from it.
Right.
I mean, that's a lot of strength.
And she helps
right
them
there.
A lot, and if you want to say in a behind-the-scenes way, like you said, with keeping all the organizational notes and records and everything. Her job is she not like an assistant schoolmistress?
She's like a teacher.
She's like a teacher, yeah. Mm-hmm. So she, you know, and this is interesting because she's a working class woman compared to Lucy, her best friend, who is from a wealthy family. I think we've talked about that a little bit before. But Lucy is much more ruled by her passions, I would say. She's kind of flighty. She's very emotional. She, you know, she says what she thinks without, you know, filters and stuff like that. Whereas Mina is a much calmer and a much more thoughtful person, female, I should say, because we're talking about gender. And it's interesting because I like you, I'm fascinated by her, but I also wonder how much of that self-control is due to the fact that she isn't from the most privileged class in society.
Could be.
Because, you know, the most privileged class in society can get away with not filtering, you know, and you know, acting on impulse and being kind of like Lucy is a little bit more flighty and butterfly-y, you know, floaty-floaty, floofy-floofy, whatever. I'm not finding my words very well, but you know what I mean. Lucy is less grounded than Mina, maybe I should say. And part of me wonders, you know, we'll talk more about that when we talk about class hierarchies and everything in later podcasts, but how much of Mina's, you know, personality is guided or motivated by her social class rather than just her innate personality as a female. I don't know. I mean,
that's interesting.
But she is definitely, in this book, I think we could safely say she is definitely one of our characters who is playing a role or acting outside the norms of social convention for a female of this time period. And that is proven by what Van Helsing says about her. By making that comparison that she is somehow both womanly and intelligent, like those are mutually exclusive things, impossible, but she's done it, you know, mm-hmm. that tells us that she is not of the norm, you know.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. And she is a protector with a relationship with Mina and Lucy when they're at the seaside, mm-hmm. and Lucy starts the sleepwalking, which mm-hmm. we later find out is her being seduced by Dracula.
Right.
Yeah. She is the protector Mina is.
As she is with Jonathan. I mean,
exactly.
She is the...
Exactly. She's a protector mm-hmm. twice over. Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. And so that's why it drives me nuts when about, oh, I don't know, 60% of the way through the book, Van Helsing's all of a sudden like, but no, Mina, this is just too much for you.
I know!
Go to your room. We will tell you nothing.
Yeah, I know. Just like, you're out.
Right. And that is... There's part of me that wants to make it that Bram Stoker is trying to make a statement that by excluding women from important information, that's what makes her imperiled, but I don't think he's actually meaning to say that.
No.
I want it to say that.
Yeah. It's almost like it's a device to isolate her from the group so that uh-huh. she is more susceptible to Dracula, maybe.
Yeah.
That's the only logical thing. Given how Bram Stoker writes this entire book, that's the only thing I think is possible in his reasoning as to why he had Van Helsing send her to her room. Because
right.
nothing else up to that point makes that a possible action. It's what comes after that, oh, okay. So if she wasn't isolated, if she wasn't away from the group, could Dracula have actually gotten to her as easily as he did? No, he could not. So mm-hmm. I feel like that had to be part of Bram Stoker's rationale. But you're right. It's a moment in the book that's kind of a clunker. It's like, what? No.
Yeah. Yeah, like if this were an honest trailer, they would explain it as, now, Mina, go to your room because reasons.
Exactly. So, because reasons, yeah.
Right. Got to move the plot along. No, yeah. I think you're right. And I will say that even though I look at that was the point where I got kind of disappointed in Mina. And mm-hmm. I'm like, I don't feel as connected with you anymore. She still does show some strength.
Yeah.
Like, for example, even when she is under Dracula's spell and she has that, like, mind connection when she's in a dreamlike mm-hmm. state, she is still, while kind of going through this hazy, foggy temptation connection with him, doing things like she's the one who has memorized the train schedule mm-hmm. so that they can go after Dracula.
Mm-hmm.
She is the one who is both being tempted mm-hmm. By Dracula as she and Van Helsing are getting closer and closer to Dracula's mm-hmm. estate, but also resisting as hard as she psychologically
right.
can.
And I do love that she is tempted. I mean, she's gone through so much at this point in the story. She knows what he is to a certain degree. She knows the evil, if you will. She knows, and yet she's still tempted. And I love that about her character. I love that it is her character is allowed to be tempted mm-hmm. because that shows us that she's human, you know?
Mm-hmm.
She is a human being. She's not in full control over every little... She's not a robot, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I find that to be fascinating. And I think that a lot of the characters in this book have actually either helped create or maybe even start some stereotypical characters we see in a lot of literature and movies and everything ever since. And I think Mina is one of those characters that the nuances of her personality as a female in this story. I mean, think of, you know, Lara Croft, Tomb Raider. I mean... You know, Mina could have been a Lara Croft, you know? I mean, she until she got sent to her room, you know?
Right.
So I feel like she's laying the groundwork in a way for characters in the future that don't have anything to do with the Dracula story. But
right.
I think a lot of our characters have that effect.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I'm sure because there's so much tie over between gender norms and sexuality episode, but I'm sure that as we start talking about vampire stories in general and about how a lot of vampire stories have, you know, very dominant females as part of them.
Yes, they do.
I wouldn't call Mina a dominant female, but she does
strong.
In some ways.
Strong.
Said,
strong and like a lead. A lead in the story. I wouldn't say that Mina's a lead in the story. She's definitely the lead female,
uh-huh.
but she's not a lead in the story. Jonathan is the counterpart to Dracula as far as lead in the story, I think. And he's an interesting character because he's not a manly man. And, you know, I wonder and think that perhaps he helped develop this, you know, sensitive, romantic lead type of man that's not the, you know, the manly man. And in contrast with Dracula, who... Dracula's really hard. I mean, you can't really say that Dracula fits a gender norm because he's a supernatural being. He's not really a gender, you know. He presents as a man when he's not a bat or a wolf or, you know, whatever. But he's not really, it's hard to classify him, right? And I think that's one of the most wonderful things about the story is that you're reading along and you're thinking of him as a man, and then he starts, you know, sucking the blood out of people and flying around as a bat. You're like, oh yeah, he's not a man, you know, he's a vampire. That's a whole different category, you know. And he really, you know, he really kind of can cross over in the gender role, if you will. He's he's sometimes, you know, more feminine, sometimes more masculine, sometimes he's paternalistic. He's very kind of oddly paternalistic to those three vampire women. You know, they are his, we call them his wives, I guess, but he treats them more like he would treat children. You know, he's like, Jonathan, he doesn't want them to suck the blood of Jonathan until after he has. He's the boss, right? Mm-hmm. They're his underlings. That's more of a parent-child relationship than, you know, to me, it reads that way a little bit.
Yeah, or like a ruler and subject.
Yeah,
or
exactly. Or, you know, some weird, you know, prince of something that has like a million wives. I mean, it's very strange, but he defies most gender norms, and yet, at the same time, you can find elements of Dracula that fit a lot of gender norms, including, you know, gender norms that aren't, what do you call it? Like, either or, you know, that the spectrum. He's the spectrum. Mm-hmm. He can be the spectrum, yeah.
I wanted to also give a quick shout out to the other two members of our Vampy Squad. Quincy Morris, the Texan.
The manly man. He's the manly man, yeah.
Oh, he is just the stereotype of this big, I'm gonna tote my guns Texan.
Yep.
And I love him for it. I think he's hilarious. He is a stereotype.
Yeah,
that's why I find him hilarious.
He has a little bit of sensitivity, though. He's very, very kind when Lucy turns him down and he, you know, tells her that he will always be her friend and be there if she needs him and all that. So he has a little bit of... He doesn't go off in a huff like a offended manly man might who, you know, if this woman didn't appreciate me, screw her, you know.
Right,
he's not like
right.
that. He's like, well, okay, I take it on the chin like a man and,
that's right.
you know, he really is a quintessential manly man.
Do you think that that's an intentional pun?
I know. I think I just said that. I think it just occurred to me. I don't think so, but I don't know. Bram Stoker's such a genius. He could have thought of that before me. And then Dr. Seward. Is it Jack? I think his name's John, but he goes by Jack. Jack Seward.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, he I don't think really defies any gender typing that
no,
I can see.
He's pretty simplistic in a way. I feel like he's one of the most one dimensional characters in the book. Mm-hmm. His passions are under control, you know, when Lucy doesn't accept his proposal, he gets depressed. We see him be much more depressed. He talks in his journal, I think it is, about how he's got to distract himself with Renfield or the patient or whatever because he doesn't want to think about Lucy, you know. So he is sensitive. We get a little bit more of his, you know, mental state through that time period after Lucy has rejected his proposal. But he isn't really a standout character, if you will. I can't honestly think of a moment that sticks in my mind where he takes action in some way that is like, ah, you know, I'm sure he does. I just, nothing sticks in my mind. Whereas, you know, I can think of a lot of times with Jonathan where something he did or said sticks in my mind, or Van Helsing, it sticks in my mind, or even Quincy, it sticks in my mind. Jack Seward is a little bit more of a vanilla character for me. He's just a little bit, and I understand why he's in the book. I mean, we have to have that connection with the insane asylum in Renfield because that adds some creepy depth to the powers of Dracula, and there's the bugs and the mice and the cats and the, you know, the spiders and all that weird, and birds and all that stuff that Renfield's up to. It lends to the horror supernatural elements of the story. And the vehicle is the asylum, and Dr. Seward is the person who's running the asylum. Right. So, and clearly Bram Stoker was fascinated with the human psyche, you know, and what crazy people can convince themselves of. So it's, I like that part of it. I like him in the story.
Right.
I just feel like as far as like these male characters go, he's kind of vanilla for me.
Yeah, I think he's more of an idea than a gender in some ways. He is science,
yes,
and
exactly.
Modern science that comes to terms with there is more out there than just what we know through modern science.
Right. Which is difficult for him, I think, even though it's not like he doesn't like have raging arguments or battles or anything, but I feel like, you know, when Van Helsing is finally telling them what he believes Dracula really is, that's got to be tough for Dr. Seward because he's a man of science, you know. And yet the things he has seen in his practice in the asylum helps him accept at some point what Van Helsing is presenting to them.
Right.
Because he's seen the effect of what he believes is this connection and everything with Renfield that Dracula has. So,
Yeah, and I mean, if he wasn't at least open to the possibility, he never would have called on Van Helsing.
No.
Even though he didn't know everything Van Helsing knew.
You're right. He is the one who reaches out to him. I've forgotten that. That is the one thing I should always remember about Jack Seward. He's the one who reached out to Van Helsing.
Mm-hmm.
And Van Helsing is so interesting because he is the combination of science and religion. And by religion, I mean supernatural, beyond science, you know, things we can't explain, that kind of stuff. And he is the both. He has science, and he has that ability, or he represents the non-science, maybe I should say beyond science, things in the universe that that we are supposed to believe exist. And of course we believe vampires exist, right? Join us next time when we continue discussing gender roles and norms in our four nice selections this year: Jane Eyre, Gone with the Wind, Dracula, and Little Women. This has been At the Roundtable with Alice
and Sarah E.
of Community Education Arts.
Our nonprofit organization is based in Noblesville, Indiana. You can find us online at cearts.org. We'd like to thank James Weston for writing our intro music and for his technical savvy.
Join us next time
at the Roundtable.